Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, we're going to have Summit County Councilmember Glenn Wright on with a recap of yesterday's county council meeting. Park City Leadership founder Miles Raderman has details about Leadership 101 that is happening tomorrow morning. And the executive director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, will be on with a monthly update and to talk about some of the in-person screenings coming back tomorrow, I believe. But on to local news before we get to our interviews. Park City local Wyatt Pike broke his social media silence after dropping out of American Idol earlier this week. KBCW's Jessica Lowell has more.
Park City resident Wyatt Pike posted on Instagram Wednesday afternoon that he had to leave the show for personal reasons. In the post, he said he's grateful that he'll be able to continue to play music. He added that there will be more musical things to come from him in the future. American Idol host Ryan Seacrest was brief and didn't offer any explanation during the episode why Pike wasn't returning to the show.
Before we get to the results, I have to tell you that finalist Wyatt Pike will not be competing in the competition. He had to drop out, but we wish him the very best, okay?
During Pike's last performance on American Idol, the judges complimented his performance of You Somebody by Kings of Leon. Katy Perry called him an authentic singer-songwriter and implied he was a leader in the competition. Luke Bryan said Pike was going to be able to do music for the rest of his life. And Lionel Richie said Pike had a style that the judges liked to watch, and the 20-year-old was on his way to something big. KPCW has tried to reach Pike and a publicist from American Idol, but has not received any reply. Up until last year, Pike was a volunteer DJ at KPCW. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
Well, the Katie Fisher Teacher of the Year Award Program and the Wasatch Education Foundation recently acknowledged 8 Wasatch County School District teachers for their dedication and leadership. The Fisher family sponsors the Wasatch School District Teacher of the Year Award with fanfare and celebration at each of the district's 8 schools. Carolyn Murray has this.
Director of the Ed Foundation Board and Wasatch County School District Public Information Officer Kirsta Albert said the award has been around for years. Still, they changed the name after board member Rocky Fisher offered to sponsor the program in honor of his daughter, Katie.
His daughter, Katie, is just a delightful teenager who just sparks cheer and just a lovely feeling in everyone she comes across. And so in her honor, the Fisher family established the Teacher of the Year Award in her name.
She said each school decides its criteria to acknowledge its teachers. She said most of the schools include the parents in the selection process.
The impacts of the teachers day-to-day with their students reaches into the home on many occasions. And it's so lovely to see how much these teachers are beloved by their students, by their peers. So it takes a different form in each of the schools, and we allow the building principals to decide how that looks.
The awards can go to a cross-section of teachers at various places in their careers. Albert said special education teachers have significant challenges in non-pandemic times.
And these are teachers all the way from those who have been just teaching a few years after being one of our interns and then coming in at the high school, which is the case in Drew Camps Wofford. Or we have teachers who've been teaching for literally decades. This year in particular, and unsurprisingly, we had a number of special education teachers. And these are definitely individuals who are called in a very special way to help our most vulnerable students in the district.
Albert said the recognition and monetary award is one way to show educators they are valued.
So it's really a great opportunity to honor each of them. And not only do they get flowers and a basket and the recognition from their peers and their school community, they also get a $1,000 check.
The 8 recognized teachers represent each of the 5 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, and the Wasatch High School. Next year's awards will include the Wasatch Learning Academy, dedicated to online learning. The challenges this year show the critical need for quality teachers instructing students online. You can find the link to the Wasatch Education Foundation along with a list of the award winners on kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, the Utah Department of Health is recommending vaccine providers pause administration of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. This pause comes after six women were diagnosed with a rare but treatable type of blood clot. Of the more than 6.8 million people who have received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the United States, there have been six reported cases of blood clots. All six were women between 18 and 48 years old. Their symptoms occurred 6 to 13 days after being vaccinated. Utah has administered almost 77,000 Johnson & Johnson vaccines, and there have been no reports of the rare blood clots in this state, according to a statement from the Utah Department of Health. Department Executive Director Rich Saunders says the pause is the right thing to do, despite slowing the vaccine rollout. The State Department of Health will work closely with the CDC and FDA to determine how to move forward. A CDC Committee on Immunization Practices met yesterday to review the cases. The FDA is recommending people should contact their doctor if they experience severe headaches, abdominal pain, leg pain, or shortness of breath within 3 weeks of receiving the J&J vaccine. Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the line with a recap, we have Councilor Glenn Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
How are you doing today on this snowy Thursday?
Oh, I'm doing well. I had a major workout in my driveway after the council meeting yesterday to clear my driveway of the what we would normally think of as Sierra cement rather than Utah snow.
Absolutely. You got to get that exercise in any way you can. All right. So let's move on to recapping yesterday's Summit County Council meeting. The council did not come to a decision about the neighborhood mixed use zone and MPD. One particular issue was should they require that 50% of residential units in an NMU project be affordable housing. I believe the standard is now only 20%. Councillor, you mentioned that you've heard opinions pro and con about this 50% requirement. Who are you hearing from?
Well, we heard from one resident who I think has a development background who thought the 50% might be too high. On the other hand, I have regular communications with Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust. When I had mentioned to them in the last couple of days that we were contemplating this, they thought that the Nexus study that they received a few years ago really wouldn't support this particular percentage. But really the discussions we had are not so much about the 50% number. I think we're going to probably zero in on a number somewhere around there, but more on what really is our market for affordable housing and how do we create the right mix, both of types of units and the distribution of units available for people at various income levels.
Right, and when you mentioned varying different sizes, could this lead to any kind of unintentional consequences if it's all the wrong size type unit?
You never can tell. That's why we want to be careful about it. We're going to have some significant additional discussions about it. Jeff Jones, our economic development and housing coordinator, will come in and speak to us about the issue. We want to get it right. That's why we're taking a little bit of extra time on affordable housing as part of the NMU.
And speaking of the NMU, is a decision about that zone still a little bit out of reach? You discussed if you want to wait on this until you revamp the general plan section on affordable housing. What is the status of that?
Again, that's to be determined. I'm not sure that we have a complete consensus on it yet. I believe we will move forward on it eventually. Whether we want to wait until we get the Chapter 5 revisions in the general plan, or another option is we could settle on generally what we want to do with the NMU, pass it with an implementation date when we pass the Chapter 5 modifications, which I understand we will probably see from the Planning Commission sometime this summer.
And Council also approved the interlocal agreement between Summit County and the new High Valley Transit District, and this will detail what services the county will provide to High Valley for the near future. Is it correct that the agreement was originally for a 50-year term, but it was changed to only 10?
Yes, that is correct. The 50-year term was kind of a placeholder that was put in the ILA from other franchise agreements we've had with other entities. And actually, some of those franchise agreements, we've lowered the number significantly also. So, it's now 10 years, and that's probably a reasonable period of time to evaluate the system, and that will be High Valley will be providing, and we'll be able to make some further decisions 10 years out.
Right. Do you have any idea kind of if and when High Valley will evolve and become an independent district?
Yes, we have a definite date on that. We're severing our relationship of the Summit County Transit District, which is now High Valley Transit, with Park City July 1st. So that district will be operational by July 1st.
Looking forward to it. So the next topic on the agenda was the Wallaway Ranch proposal in Lower Silver Creek. Council did not make a decision about the appeal. After hearing arguments, you held a closed session and then announced you would take it under advisement until next week. Do you have any hint of what you need to get to a decision?
Well, it was in closed session, so I really can't talk about that. Mm-hmm. I think we are close to a decision, and that's all I can say.
Okay. Can you talk about if the concept needs to be changed or any kind of conditions you want to see?
Well, I can talk about some of the things we talked about in open session, and we talked about the size of the structure. And Chris Robinson actually had a very interesting idea of moving the buildings around so they wouldn't impinge so much on the local dwellings. But beyond that, I really can't have any. Because we were in closed session, I could be seriously sanctioned if I was to discuss the issue any further with you.
Understood. Well, the Snyderville Planning Commission recommended against the ranch because it didn't fit what they called a human scale. But the appellant attorney, Brent Bateman, objected that is actually too subjective. Do you think the code provision about human scale is satisfactory, or does that need to change?
Actually, we have a proposal to change it, and we're studying that. I can't remember if it was 1 or 2 weeks ago we had a proposal from the Planning Commission to change the approvals on accessory dwellings or accessory buildings, not accessory dwellings, accessory buildings. And we decided we had to study that a little bit further. The Planning Department is going to give us some additional information. But I expect we'll probably resolve that issue with new regulations on accessory buildings probably in the next month or two.
Understood.
But because this was a previous approval or a previous application, it wouldn't apply to Wallaway Ranch.
Gotcha. So it was also reported that the council is in favor of this green cemetery idea. I believe that's out near Oakley. Is that correct?
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. I think it's a very interesting idea on a environmentally sensitive way to bury people. It's something that's growing around the country. Bodies are buried without kind of a permanent coffin. They may be just wrapped up in cloth, and underground they kind of do the dust-to-dust routine fairly quickly in just a number of years without a lot of environmental damage. And it's very environmentally more sensitive than a typical cemetery.
Right. And what kind of discussions have you had with some of the residents out there? How receptive are the people that live in that area to an idea like this?
We really haven't had any feedback from them on it. It was in public discussion a couple of weeks ago. The landowner is interested in doing it. There's a mortuary that's interested in running it. There will be opportunities as some of those. There will have to be some regulatory permits involved, and there will be opportunities for neighbors to weigh in on it. I don't think it's going to receive a lot of negative comment. One of the comments we have generally countywide is we need more burial space. And this is a really environmentally sensitive way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add before we let you go today?
I would just point out that our virus numbers are looking at a pretty good trend. Our vaccination numbers are up significantly. We are probably the best county in the state for virus vaccine uptake. We would like to get a little bit better participation in the 18 to 50 range on the east side of the county, and we'll be actually starting some clinics for the 16 to 18 group in high school shortly, as well as making vaccines available in the clinics on the east side of the county shortly. I don't have the exact details of dates and times for those, but you can check with the health department on those details.
All right. Well, Counselor, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate you coming on.
Good talking to you, Sean. This is our first discussion, and I look forward to meeting you in the future.
Wonderful. All right. That's Summit County Counselor Glenn Wright. City Council in Park City returns to regular meetings today, and for the first time in a while, the Arts and Culture District will not be on the agenda. Park City Deputy Manager David Everett told KPCW on Wednesday that discussions amongst the councilors on the proposed Arts and Culture District will return later this month. Everett said the city is currently reviewing both the overall scope as well as financial plans for the project. Current estimates put the costs for the project in the ballpark of $107 million. One thing that will be on Thursday's agenda is continued discussion on what summer events in Park City may or may not look like. The council first addressed the topic in March and asked city staff to explore how to hold events with reduced capacity and continued COVID-19 health measures in place. Everett said there are a few options available to the city, like ticketing events or holding them at smaller venues. He added the fact that despite nearly all of last summer's events getting canceled due to COVID-19, people still came to Park City, which gives the council another element to consider.
We look forward to that discussion because I know that that's a very important issue to both the city council and the community as we've worked through both the notion of event fatigue over the years, sort of pre-COVID, but then also when COVID happened, acknowledging that despite there not really being events happening in Park City last year, there were a lot of people here.
Council will also discuss potentially entering an interlocal agreement with Utah State Parks for various maintenance and improvement projects for 2.75 miles of the rail trail between Bonanza Drive and State Route 248. Everett said the agreement has the potential to make a wide range of improvement and maintenance options possible in the future, including repaving and possibly widening the trail, bridge maintenance, and providing various additional amenities.
The city is, I think, really interested in upgrading that really important amenity and transportation corridor, honestly, for residents and visitors. So the goal is to just basically have Utah State Parks allow the city to perform that work and upgrade the rail trail.
Council will not be approving an agreement on Thursday, but may ask the city staff to pursue a future agreement with Utah State Parks. Council will also consider an application from the Fairway Meadows subdivision near the Park City Golf Course to prohibit nightly rentals in the neighborhood. Current code allows nightly rentals in that part of the city, but the neighborhood's covenants, conditions, and restrictions, or CC&Rs, prohibit them. City code has authority over neighborhood CC&Rs. Today's virtual meeting begins at 5:15 p.m. A link to the agenda, as well as information on how to participate, can be found through a link on our website, kpcw.org. Utah has reported no new COVID-19 deaths for three of the last 4 days. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has the latest COVID-19 numbers.
COVID-19 deaths in Utah have been steadily decreasing since mid-January. The CDC model also predicts a decrease in the state's death rate for the next 4 weeks. To date, 2,161 Utahns have died due to COVID-19, including 11 from Summit County and 21 from Wasatch County. While death rates have been decreasing, Utah saw an increase in hospitalizations. There are 148 people in the hospital with COVID-19 statewide. Tuesday, there were 124 people hospitalized. Just over 74% of all referral center ICU beds are in use. New COVID-19 cases were down week over week. The Utah Department of Health announced 530 new COVID-19 cases, which is about 80 fewer cases than the state saw at the same time last week. In the Wasatch Back, Summit saw a slight increase in cases. The county reported 11 new cases. In comparison, last Wednesday, the county saw 10. Wasatch County reported 8 new cases, which is significantly down from last Wednesday when the county saw 14. There were more than 8,100 people tested for the first time statewide, with around 20,000 total tests administered. On average, just under 4% of tests over tests are coming back positive, while the average percent positivity for people over people is around 8%. There are around 30,000 people vaccinated for COVID-19 since Monday, bringing the total number to more than 1.7 million doses administered. Summit County has administered more than 37,000 total vaccines, and Wasatch has given out nearly 19,000 doses. Both counties are registering to vaccinate residents 16 years or older. Summit and Wasatch counties are both in the moderate level of Utah's COVID-19 transmission index. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
On the line with me now, we have Park City Leadership founder Miles Radiman. He's going to be talking all about Leadership 101, which is a virtual event starting tomorrow. Good morning, Miles. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm using your new app.
So Leadership 101 starts tomorrow, April 16th, on Zoom from 8:30 to noon. Give us a little bit of more info about Crash Course, or excuse me, Leadership 101. Is this, sounds like a crash course in local government, or does it go beyond that?
It's kind of a crash course. It's kind of a smorgasbord or potpourri of catching up with what's going on in the greater Park City community. And this is the 24th year that we're doing it. It'll be the first year we're doing it on Zoom. It's not my preferred way of doing it because so much of the leadership program is about creating community, and that to me is a lot of face-to-face interaction. So usually we'd have it at a hotel, we'd have lunch together, and it would go all day. But we're adapting to the realities that we face like everyone else. And so we will do it on Zoom, and we will present a lot of very interesting information tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The program was started as a way of the leadership program giving back to the community and just giving, as you said, a crash course. And of course, the community has gotten so much larger and more complex since we first started this 24 years ago. But, you know, I've asked community leaders from the governmental segments, the development segments, the schools, the nonprofits, some of the other districts to just chime in. And, of course, we can't cover everything, but we could give you a feel. And we've broken it down into sort of getting directions from the city, where are we going as a city, from the county. You just talked to Glenn Wright. He'll be speaking tomorrow as well. So what the county directions are, and Tom Fisher will be there. We have a growth panel called Growth on the Horizon to give people maybe a completer feel for all the kinds of growth taking place, both in Summit and Wasatch counties, and because we have some Wasatch County representatives as well. Then we have a panel on keeping up with the growth. How are we doing keeping up with the infrastructure? And so we're going to be talking like to the Water Reclamation District, to Mountlands Community Housing Trust, to the school district, Dr. Jill Goodday, the school superintendent, Open Space, Cheryl Fox will talk. You were talking about the transportation district that's starting now, the High Valley Transportation. So Carolyn Rodriguez will talk, as well as our own transportation planner, Julia Collins. And we are going to talk about how we level the playing field, because so much of what we're doing now is really aimed toward diversity and equity and the realities of that. So we've asked Diego Zagar from the Park City Community Foundation and Ellen Silver from Jewish Family Services to talk. And then we're going to assess the ski season. And Jennifer Wesselhoff, who is our president of our chamber, and Nathan Rafferty, the from Ski Utah, CEO of Ski Utah. And we'll end up finally with what are our Olympic dreams and hopes. Colin Hilton, who a lot of you know from the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, also running the Utah Olympic Park. He'll be talking about mostly about where we are in terms of bidding for an Olympics in our future. Mm-hmm. So it's a very full day. I mean, it's actually 8:30 to noon. It is kind of a fire hose of information. There won't be a lot of time for interaction from the audience. So it's mostly getting out information on a broad cross-section of subjects that people might be interested in.
Absolutely. You mentioned all the moving parts in Park City in the near future we'll be seeing. With things like the Arts and Culture District being worked at with City Council, the base development at Park City Mountain Resort. Can you hear me, Miles? Looks like we lost Miles. All right, we are back with Miles on a traditional phone line once again. Miles, sorry about that.
No problem.
All right, so I was actually just asking about the interest in Leadership 101 this year. You mentioned all the things going on here in Park City. We've got the Arts and Culture District, the base development at Park City, future-based development at Deer Valley, and then you mentioned the Olympics as well, possibly in the next 10 years. How much interest have you gotten for this year's program?
Well, we didn't ask for any pre-registrations this year, so anyone can sign up just by, you don't have to sign up, just come on the city's website, right on the homepage. It'll have a place where you can click into the Zoom call starting at 8:30 in the morning, and there's no need to sign up. So I really have no idea how many people are interested or will sign in. Generally, we get about 100 people coming to the live session each year.
Mm-hmm. And how is Leadership 101 different from the traditional leadership class, the year-long class? Is it the same kind of curriculum? Is this just kind of really intense one day? Or what does the leadership class kind of flesh out everything you'd hear in Leadership 101 throughout months?
Well, the leadership class is really more about networking with each other and developing individual leadership skills. So while some of this information is presented to the leadership class, this is really, tomorrow morning, is the best time to get everything in one place in an encapsulated and quick way. So this is much more intense in terms of local information than we provide during the whole year-long leadership class.
Mm. Anything else you want to share about Leadership 101?
Well, just we hope people tune in because we really have a great cast of characters here, a lot of them that you've already spoken to on the radio over months and months, but not generally all at one time. So I'll start off with a little bit of the history. Mayor Andy Bierman will talk about some of the directions and a lot of the people that you interview one time or another. But this is all in one place and in a very encapsulated and quick form. So you'll get a lot of information. And I'd say we always say every year, this is good if you've been here a day or if you've been here a lifetime. You're bound to learn something new that you haven't heard before.
Absolutely. And where do we find this? The link is on the Park City Municipal website. That's parkcity.org, right?
Yeah, you just go right to the parkcity.org. It's right on the homepage. It'll say click into Leadership 101, and the Zoom link is right there. It's free. It's open to anyone who'd like to, and we hope a lot of people do tune in, because you will learn something.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to it. Miles Radiman, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for your patience through a second day of some technical difficulties with our wireless system.
Well, it worked for a while, and then it just sort of died on us.
Yeah, next time. All right, Miles, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ron. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Miles Radiman, founder of Leadership Park City, talking about Leadership 101, which is tomorrow, Friday, April 16th, on Zoom, starting at 8:30, and will run until noon. Link to that is on the Park City Municipal website, parkcity.org. Well, after a cold winter season in Park City, locals are looking forward to warmer spring weather. But as KPCW's Jessica Lowell reports, people aren't the only ones out and about during spring.
Over the past couple weeks, there have been a number of wildlife sightings in Park City. The Park City Police Department has gotten calls about mother moose and their calves in roadways and elk trying to cross the road. Last Wednesday, the department got two calls in the morning and evening about large groups of elk trying to get across traffic on State Road 224. Scott Root with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources says these types of sightings aren't uncommon for this time of year.
But spring is the time that they do migrate. And a lot of people will notice that some of the deer and elk and even some moose will hang out near roads and in lower areas. As the snow melts away and you get these new plants growing, and a lot of them are along the side of the road, we'll have a lot of big game animals kind of hanging out near roads and other areas feeding on this very tasty new vegetation.
There were also reports of mountain lion and bobcat sightings late last month. One person who lives off of Iron Mountain Trail reported seeing a bobcat five times in their backyard in the span of 2 weeks. Root says the abundance of sightings isn't surprising.
Mountain lions, of course, are usually associated geographically near deer because that's their number one prey source. So if you have deer hanging out, then you'll probably have a mountain lion or two. And we're also noticing that we're getting more and more people that have, you know, like the Ring doorbell and other type of activated security systems that go right to your phone. And so we're getting a lot more sightings just because security systems are finding animals.
He says DWR will respond to calls where wildlife is posing an immediate threat. He added they can also help lead confused animals out of residential areas.
We're here to help people if they have, you know, maybe a dangerous situation for the animal or for public safety. And that's what we're here for. But if you see a moose up on the hillside and it's not really posing any danger or a mountain lion, you see it way up on the mountain, yeah, just consider yourself lucky and enjoy that wildlife experience.
DWR has partnered with the Hochul Zoo and Utah State University to educate people on wildlife safety, creating a website to inform people on how to handle conflicts with animals. For more information, you can visit wildawareutah.org. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
Well, fire season in the Park City area is at its height from roughly June to late August, with a lower than average snowpack this winter, meaning less water and drier forests. Park City highlighted some of their fire mitigation efforts at Tuesday's Coffee with Council discussion. Wildfires are always on the back of people's minds during the summer months in the West. Record-breaking fires in California and Colorado in recent years, as well as a number of fires here in Utah, have led some to worry about how vulnerable Park City is to serious wildfire. The good news, according to Tuesday's panel of Park City Councilor Tim Henney, Park City Fire Chief Paul Hewitt, Fire Marshal Mike Owens, Park City Emergency Manager Mike McComb, and Water Resources Manager Jason Christensen, Park City is not like Paradise, California, which was largely destroyed by wildfire in 2018. What is cause for concern, Christensen said, is Utah's current drought and low snowpack levels. Utah Governor Spencer Cox declared a statewide drought emergency in March, with 90% of the state experiencing what is considered extreme drought. According to Christensen, snowpack is roughly what it was in 2018. Christensen said Park City draws its water from seven different sources, but they all rely on snowmelt each year. He added that one low winter can be managed, but several in a row are something to worry about.
So we have a really diverse portfolio of water sources. But at the end of the day, all those sources are fed by snowmelt. And when we see a year like this, we're grateful that the community has diversified, that we have a variety of options to pull water from. But what really concerns us is the idea that next year could be like this as well.
Something unique to Park City that could help insulate the community from fire are the city's two ski resorts, Park City Mountain Resort and Deer Valley. Fire Marshal Owens said the district coordinates with both resorts on fire contingency plans and commended them for their efforts to reduce risks during their summer operations and maintenance work. Chief Hewitt added the most defining feature of a ski resort can also help prevent a wildfire from getting out of control.
Take a Google map and take a look at it. Every ski run is a fire break. So you do a global view of our area. We have a lot of fire breaks that were created just in ski runs. And aside from that, we have other fire breaks at the ski resort. So if you look at Google map and do some zoom ins and zoom outs, it will give you a little bit of comfort to know and see what the ski resorts are doing.
The number one thing locals can do to help reduce the risk of wildfire is creating a perimeter of defensible space around their homes. The Park City Fire District recommends at least 30 feet of defensible space around a home with thin tree and brush cover, a roof and gutters free of debris, as well as the disposal of any yard waste you might have. To help dispose of unwanted yard waste and encourage residents to create defensible space, the Fire District will start up their yearly chipping and shredding program on April 20th. More information on defensible space and the chipping and shredding program can be found at pcfd.org. And on the line with us now, we have the executive director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, with a monthly update and some info on in-person screenings finally returning. Katie, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to be here, too. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. We are super excited to announce that we are reopening this weekend, April 16th, Friday, for in-person film screening. It's been over a year since we closed the Santee due to COVID-19, and just can't wait to get back into the theater and welcome our community of film lovers into the Santee for that unparalleled experience of watching films on the big screen surrounded by our community members. And for those that are wondering, yes, popcorn with real butter will be served.
Oh, wonderful. It's not a movie without buttered popcorn. That's what I always say.
Yeah, we say that people come for the popcorn and they stay for the movie. But this weekend, we've got a great film that's actually already sold out for the first night. So if you are interested in coming back to join us, definitely get online at parkcityfilm.org and get your tickets soon for Saturday and Sunday nights. But we're opening up with the film Minari, which premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival in 2020. And it won not only the Grand Jury Prize, but also the Audience Award. And it's nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. And this is just a stunning film about a Korean-American family that moves to a farm in Arkansas in pursuit of the American dream. And it's, you know, sort of about resilience and family and what defines that place we call home. So just thought it'd be a great film to bring our community together, back together again, enjoying these incredible cinematic experiences in this ante. And just want to give a shout out to Julie Hopkins, Keller Williams Real Estate. She's one of our supporters and is underwriting the film this weekend and helping us bring it back here in the Santee. So we want to just give a little appreciation to her for her continued support over the years and certainly for this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. It sounds like a great message after a year of so much strife in the community. To hear an uplifting story like that must be a really important message to get out.
Absolutely. And, you know, we want to make sure that people know that we are, you know, we've had a great run with some private screenings for the past couple of months. We've been fine-tuning our operations as a result of the feedback we've been receiving. So, you know, we'll be continuing to follow all of our COVID protocols, including the mandatory wearing of masks. We'll have 6 feet of physical distance between each of the seat clusters in the theater, along with enhanced ventilation and cleaning measures. And of course, following our cinema safe guidelines, which you can check out on our website at parkcityfilm.org. And for those of you that are familiar with the Santee, we have 446 seats in a normal year. But so with our reduced, with the, you know, interest in maintaining the 6 feet of distance, we're operating at 14% capacity, which means we have 65 seats available for each screening. So we are asking that people buy their tickets in advance. As I mentioned earlier, we've sold out for Friday nights. We still have seats available for Saturday and Sunday nights. And we're also taking the opportunity, as things are kind of changed up this year, to change our operations a little bit. So we've listened to our community members over the years asking for earlier show times on Friday and Saturdays and figured we'd try it out this spring and see how it goes. So Friday and Saturday night shows are at 7 o'clock this year. So please note that. And then Sunday night, we'll be back at our 6 o'clock time. We're also going to bring back our free community screenings, which we do in partnership with other nonprofit organizations. And that's, you know, kind of the heart of what we do as a member of the arts community here in Park City, you know, achieving our mission of creating community through films. These community screenings are really important to the work that we do. So next week, we'll be back again on Thursday for our Thursday night films. With a film called Seeding Change, which is a documentary about social entrepreneurship. And that'll be on Earth Day, of course, and we're partnering with Recycle Utah. And we'll have a panel of, following the film, and we'll have a panel of local business leaders for a discussion after the film. And so with our free screenings, again, with capacity restrictions, we will require that people register. It is free, but you just need to register on the website so that we know you're coming, make sure you have a seat, and then, of course, for contact tracing, should that be necessary.
Mm-hmm. And with in-person screenings coming back, you have had virtual events in place over the last year. What's the status of those virtual events? Will those still be offered in some capacity going forward, or are those going to be gradually phased out over the summer?
Actually, you know, thank you for asking that, because we've actually upgraded our virtual cinema experience. This is something we've been working on, kind of fine-tuning over the past year. You know, it was something that came together, you know, obviously during challenging times last April, and independent film distributors and independent cinemas came together to offer this virtual cinema experience. And it was, you know, there were lots of different platforms one had to work with. We now have one platform. We've streamlined that experience. So you'll have one username and login. Park City Film members will be able to use their member benefits and get discounted tickets. And we've heard from a lot of community members that they've not only loved seeing films over the past year through the virtual cinema, but they want that to continue forward, because now, of course, you have flexibility to watch films at whatever time of day you'd like to watch them. It allows us to show more films than we normally could with just one screen. So absolutely, we will continue that at least through the end of this year, you know, if not longer, just based on community demand and response. So again, parkcityfilm.org, you can check out some films there. We've got some Academy-nominated films in the virtual cinema, and it allows us to be a little bit more diverse and eclectic in our curated film offering. So yeah, absolutely. We now have more than one screen to offer at Park City Film, which is fun.
Wonderful. So what are some of the other films we'll be able to experience over the coming weeks and months?
So we are, you know, as film lovers are wont to do, is that it's Academy Awards season. The Academy Awards were moved back to April 25th this year. Everyone likes to check out all the Best Picture nominees along with some of the other, you know, Academy Award potential winners to see, you know, see what their choices, fill out their Oscar ballots. So April 23rd and 25th, next weekend, we'll have Judas and the Black Messiah, nominated for 5 Academy Awards and is making history for being the first Best Picture nominee with all Black producers. The film premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival in 2021. And it's a story about Black Panther leader Fred Hampton and his eventual assassination by the FBI. Incredibly powerful and important film. Then the next weekend, we'll be following that with The Father, which is nominated for 6 Academy Awards and stars Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman and came to Sundance in 2020. And this is a story about aging and the toll that dementia can take on a person and their family members. We've actually curated films all the way through the end of May. So the other films in May include a partnership with Connect Summit County for Mental Health Awareness Month, Words on Bathroom Walls about a young boy with schizophrenia, The Truffle Hunters, which is just a delightful film from Italy about old Italian men and their dogs and hunting truffles, The Courier, a spy thriller with Benedict Cumberbatch, and Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, which premiered at Sundance this year. And it's about the history and origins of Sesame Street and just kind of formed with that revolutionary idea that the TV could be used to teach children, specifically inner city and minority kids, and be a groundbreaking force for good. So just kind of, you know, as we always do, we like to pick films that we think are not only kind of the best of the year, but also ones that we think will speak to the ethos of our community. And so it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's like the greatest joy of my life to be able to get back to bringing people together and just hearing the response, having those conversations after the films. That's been really fun to see with the private screenings, just how people are, just the joy that it brings them to be back and having those conversations, having those experiences, but as a collective, not just in isolation. So it's a very unique experience and one that we're excited to, you know, have back in action.
Absolutely. Sounds like a fantastic lineup over the next month or so. So let's talk a little bit about the summer. What can we expect from Park City Film over the summer months?
So we had a great run last summer with the Twilight Drive-In up at the Utah Olympic Park. This is a partnership between Park City Film, Dragonfly Media, and the Utah Olympic Park. And, you know, we kind of threw it out there as a test case of, well, maybe this will be a fun way to bring people together, see movies under the stars, and the response was unbelievable. We saw over 10,000 people last year, and so we'll be bringing that back. We're working on the plans right now, and the full schedule will be coming out in the coming weeks. But basically, we're looking at scheduling films from Memorial Day through Labor Day on the weekends. And we'll have a combination of films that we present in partnership with other nonprofits and community members, have kind of special themed nights with some classic films that we had a great response to last year. So Big Lebowski fans, take note. We heard you. It sold out, I think, within a couple hours. So that definitely will be coming back. We're looking at dinner and movie specials so we can help get folks into our restaurants, help get our restaurants back on their feet. Of course, action and adventure films, because, you know, we live in a mountain town and who doesn't love a good ski and mountain bike film? So definitely have some of those. So just been really fun to curate that again this year and be able to see movies under the stars and probably the most scenic drive-in in the West. I would say arguably we can stake that claim. It's pretty amazing to be up there at the Utah Olympic Park. So looking forward to bringing people back together again in the summer months.
Absolutely. I was able to experience one of those drive-ins over the summer and it was fantastic. Highly recommend it to anyone looking for a fun summer night activity. Anything else you want to share with us, Katie, before we let you go?
You know, I just want to thank our members, sponsors, grantors, donors, our film-loving community kind of at large for just the incredible support they've shown us this past year. I mean, it's been, you know, critical not only to kind of our, you know, our spirits, keeping our spirits lifted as we got through this challenging time and weather the COVID storm, but absolutely instrumental in our ability to come back, be able to innovate, be back in the Santee, bring back the Twilight Drive-In. Please check out our website, parkcityfilm.org. Get your tickets, reserve your seats. Minari is an unbelievably powerful and moving film. I can recommend it highly enough. I mean, all of them are my favorites, but certainly come back this weekend. We can't wait to have you back, and the popcorn popper is ready for you.
Absolutely. Katie, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that's Katie Wang, Executive Director of Park City Film. You can check out all of their offerings at parkcityfilm.org.